rather than being able to see it as just one small event and then go, oh, well, all these other wonderful things happen, that thing would be the thing and would be so sort of overwhelming and overpowering everything else that then that would write me off from feeling able of doing anything with her for ages afterwards.
Welcome to the Mindset Podcast for guardians of dogs who are just a little rough around the edges. I'm your host, Kaisa van Overbeek, a life coach dedicated to making life with your challenging dog feel less challenging, both by sharing stories of other people's similar experiences and by showing you how you can harness the power of your brain to make it work for you instead of against you. Welcome everyone to another interview episode of Rough Around the Edges. They're kind of my favorite episodes because I get to talk to cool people from all over the world. And as you know, I always tend to introduce people by where they're from because usually they're not from the Netherlands, which is where I'm located. And today is no exception at all. I am talking to Matilda Kelso, who is currently still in the Lake District in the UK. Her business is called Matilda the Canine Coach, and I'm sure we're going to get to that and how she got to running that business or founding that business as we get to talking. I also always kind of like to explain how I get to know these people that I have on my podcast, and a lot of that is through social media, and Matilda's no exception. I don't know how I started following her, but I did, and she put up a post at one point where she was basically sharing the rough, well, there you go, fun play on words, the rough side of living with a dog. And I think even in the post, she didn't even mention challenging dog or any of that sort. She just mentioned the fact that you're caring for another living being and that there is no off to that. That is 24 hours a day, and that can be rough, and sometimes it's rough on you. She was very open and very vulnerable sharing that. And that triggered something in me, because I guess that is also the reason that I started this podcast, is to share these kind of things with other people as well, so that you know that it is normal, that it is not normal to be 24/7 happy peppy, always in love with your dog, always managing everywhere, everything, and never being stressed. That is absolutely not the case. So at that point, I reached out to her, and then within no time, we decided that we wanted to talk to each other on the podcast, and within no time, we made it work. So here we are. With that introduction, I'm just going to hand over the mic to Matilda and kind of ask her, what's the backstory? What triggered all of this? What's sort of your dog resume, if we want to call it that? And let's take it from there. Matilda, over to you.
Thank you. And thank you for having me on the podcast. It's really nice to have connected. And that's why I love the internet, because without it, without Instagram, we wouldn't have connected. So there are lots of lovely benefits to social media. So I have always loved dogs. I've always loved animals. I used to want to work with animals when I was younger, but didn't really see how to do that without having more of a sciencey background, and so sort of it wasn't an avenue that I went down after I left school. I've had Rafiki is my current dog. She is coming up to 3 in May. I don't know where all that time is gone. And my other dog, Nala, she is living with my ex-partner. And she was our first dog, as sort of adults, as much as we can call ourselves adults. And then before that, I had Noodle, who was our family dog, who was a lovely big black Labrador, who passed away a few years ago now, and he was just such a gorgeous soul. I've had lots of other sort of dogs in my life through family and friends, that I've sort of really deeply connected with. At one point, I did consider going into, and I'm really glad I didn't now, but I did consider going into. Sorry for anyone listening, it's the dog trying to lick my face. I did consider going into the sort of dog section of the police force because I was like, well, I want to work with dogs, and this is a side of like veterinary practices and things like that. I wasn't really too familiar with sort of like dog trainers or anything like that. So I was like, well, this is an avenue to work with dogs. But I actually, up until the age of 19, had a really intense fear of loud noises. So this included dogs barking, which is really interesting. I had such a deep love of dogs. But then when they barked, it caused fight or flight in me, and I would go into sort of panic mode. And it was not an enjoyable experience. So it was really interesting to have that kind of deep love and wanting to be around dogs and work with dogs, but then also actually have this really sort of innate fear. And it was always quite hard to explain to people, like, no, I love your dog, but when it barks, that's when there's a problem. I then actually got, well, discovered hypnotherapy and received hypnotherapy, and actually managed to completely sort of get to the core of that, and where that fear had come from. And it actually had stemmed from when I was a baby in a high chair. A dog had sort of put its paws up on my high chair and barked in my face. And that had triggered that sort of fear in me. So then was able to sort of heal that. And then that sort of opened me up to being able to sort of be a lot more comfortable being around dogs.
Can I already interrupt you and ask you something about that? Because was the reason that you sought out hypnotherapy to try and, I want to say, remedy that, or not remedy it, change the result of the trigger, or maybe get rid of the trigger? I don't know how to put it precisely. Was that because you knew you wanted to work with dogs and that was something that was in the way, or was there another reason behind that, if you're comfortable sharing that?
No, that's fine. It wasn't. I think at that point, I had sort of, I'd grown up and tabled kind of any plans of necessarily working with dogs. I'd sort of fallen into a whole different career path, and I was good at it, so I was progressing in it. So I wasn't really thinking. It wasn't like a, okay, I need to solve this so I can go down this path. It was more just because it wasn't just dogs barking, it was fireworks. It was even if someone in the street shut their car door too loudly, it would startle me, and it would sort of cause me to feel quite distressed. So it was a really it was impact. And if balloons, if someone pops a balloon, party poppers, I couldn't be around people popping party poppers. It was a very deep sort of issue. So yeah, it stemmed from that more than from I want to go down this new path. But then obviously has been very helpful that I had sought out that help to then go down this path. And I still do sometimes now. It's got better and better and better as the years have gone on since I've initially had the hypnotherapy. But I still sometimes now will startle if I'm in quite an echoey environment and it's close quarters and they bark without any necessarily pre-warning, then it can still sort of make me jump a little bit, but not in anywhere near the same way that it used to.
I'm completely interrupting your introduction, but that's how I roll on this podcast. I just ask questions about what pops up in my mind. Is there some kind of acceptance now, more of the, let's call it the startle? Is it something that you have also worked on? So on the one hand, the hypnotherapy deals with, changing sort of the connotation between the sound happening and then, the emotion attached to it. Like you said, it's never perfect. Sometimes it still happens. Have you also done work on, what you make it mean when it still happens? Because what I found with a lot of people is that sometimes what's the thing that's making it worse isn't the actual sort of startle, for example, in this case, or the scaredness or the reflex, but then the Oh, this is never going to get better. This is never going to go away. This is going to ruin my life. Like all the follow-up thoughts are what makes it even worse, so to say. Is there now some kind of like, oh yeah, I startle that kind of acceptance? And if so, how did you get there? All of
Yeah,
that.
so definitely I'm in a place now where it is, it's not something, I don't make it mean anything. I don't have any negative self-talk around it at all. It's like, oh, that happened, and then kind of carry on. In the beginning, I still had a degree of sort of feeling, I think I felt so much better because it was such a huge change. It was such a huge change that I did feel so much better. That I don't think I was ever really harsh on myself. But then, especially once I found it maybe had more layers to it, once I started actually then in the sort of dog world in a professional way, then there was a part of me that felt like, well, when I'm going to be working with people and their dogs are going to be barking around me, and if I startle, are they going to think X, Y, and Z of me? And are they going to question my capabilities because I'm startling when their dog's barking? But actually, for the most part, I'm very grateful that actually I've attracted and worked with people that have been very kind, considerate sort of human beings. And actually, If I have startled, I've explained and said about my history and everything, and everyone's been in quite considerate and understanding of that. So I think the more actually I was open about it, and sort of talked about it, and that people were like, oh wow, of course, yeah, it's amazing that you're even able to be around them in this close quarters barking at all, and sort of things like that, then helped me feel more sort of comfortable and confident with being in those situations and it potentially coming up. And now I've got to a point where it just, I've done so much work this past year on supporting my nervous system and regulating myself and understanding my nervous system. So actually now I'm just like, well, I'm having a reaction and a response to something, and that's, in an ideal world, I'd love to not startle, but it's not the end of the world if I do.
that's amazing. And I want to already ask you about what all of that work has been, but probably we should go back to the introduction part first, where you explain, because you said I was in a completely different career. I have worked on the, I'm just going to call it sounds and sensitivity, the startling. That was very helpful for changing the career. But tell me, there's something in between there. What allowed you, or what made you go from one career to the other?
Yes, so my career was in the hospitality industry, and my previous partner is a chef, and we met working that way, and we were together for 7 years, and we were both working up the ladder. Our end goal was eventually to open our own restaurant and sort of go down that whole road, and then actually lockdown happened, and I think this is probably the case for so many people, had the opportunity to slow down, to rest, to have time to, eat properly. I don't know if you're familiar with the hospitality industry, but the hours are very long and grueling. You don't have, there were times where I was getting home from a shift at 2 in the morning, and then I was having to get up and leave to go to my next shift at sort of 5:30 in the morning again. So there was no way of supporting my health and well-being and actually doing anything really outside of that.
I imagine there's also a lot of just grab a bite to eat really quickly
Oh
before
God, yeah, and
I.
just eating, just old like chips and lots of drinking that whole kind of just that cycle, that kind of a never-ending cycle of sort of ill health. And it's sort of COVID happened, lockdown happened, and we had time and it was really wonderful. And we had Nala, our dog. I'll dive into her after I've done this, because that will be a whole thing. But she's the most, I don't like using the word difficult, but she's the most difficult dog I have ever encountered.
and probably still is to this day. Wonderful, wonderful soul, but lots of struggles. So we sort of had her, we were kind of trying to work through things with her. We had all this time, it was very wonderful. We were cooking my food, we were, spending time together. It was really nice. And then I was like, wow, actually, I could have a life. There is a life outside of this sort of rat race of the hospitality industry and working my way up the ladder in management. And then I sort of went back, had to do all of the sort of reopening, having to do all the like regulations, the rules. In the UK, we had the tier system, and so the rules and everything kept changing, trying to manage all the staff around it and the customers, and it was just a whole new sort of layer of stress. So we very quickly, me and my previous partner, sort of said, actually, maybe let's not open a restaurant and like let's put a pin in that and see. So then our kind of future became a bit more open-ended because we hadn't actually, out that had been our sort of thing we were working towards. And then I sort of decided to demote myself and left the job where I was working my way up in management and took a bartending job. Then saw a job come up, a management job in a place that I'd always really, really wanted to work at, and it hadn't worked out previously. So I thought, you know what, I'll give it a go. This will be my last sort of opportunity to see if this is still the right kind of career path for me. Went and worked there for 6 weeks and went, nope, I'm not doing this. Left with nothing on the horizon, which actually then created space to bring Rafiki into our lives. So my friend has got
Oh no,
working abroad.
hold on. That is too fast. I have questions.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to know all about Rafiki, but I have questions.
Yeah.
So you say, I just decided to demote myself and take a bartending job. And then I just saw this other job that I'd always been interested in, and I just gave it a try for 6 weeks and realized it wasn't for me. Now, I think there are very few people who can talk about changing jobs like that, who would just go, yeah, no, didn't go for this job, took a bartending job, went for the other job, don't think it was that. Was it that easy? What was the thought process there? What just allowed you to
We're
go,
going to have a very long podcast episode because that's just like a drop in the ocean compared to the last sort of year or two of my life.
Oh my goodness. Okay, summary,
So,
short summary.
a quick summary is it was at the time, no, it was very stressful, really long hours. I was being rotated 14-hour shifts, and then I was ending up working 16 hours with like no breaks. I'd quit drinking. I'd not long quit drinking. I was still smoking, so I was like smoking like a chimney, hardly eating, working all the hours under the sun. It was horrific. Felt really sort of like, oh my God, what am I doing? I want to get out of this industry altogether. Like, I don't want to go back to doing a bartending job. It was really stressful. I was applying to loads of jobs where I was overqualified, not even hearing anything back, like at all, and just didn't know what to do. And then my general manager, who I loved and got on really well with, was said, I'm leaving. And I was like, oh my God, no, I can't do this without you. And so I basically just was quite gutsy and just went, well, I don't want to be here without you. So I'm handing my notice in too. Felt quite nervous of doing that because I was like, well, then I'm leaving them in the doo-doo because they're going to lose both of their managers simultaneously. But I just had got to that point where it was just that I couldn't keep doing it anymore, and I just had to leave. And I had been sensible enough financially that I was like, I've got a bit of a cushion where I could not work for a couple of months and still pay my portion of the rent and the bills, and it not impact us too much. So that was sort of the kind of process that I went through, and I've done it actually with pretty much all of my jobs. I have left them without having something lined up, and then whatever next has just kind of naturally kind of come in. So I think it's just, I don't know why, it's just the way I've always sort of done things.
People can't see, of course, but they can't see my eyes go all big now on the screen and go like, okay.
Yeah, it's a lot of sort of tapping into that kind of the trusting that everything's going to work out, which does take some practice.
What is the belief for you? The belief that allows you to trust that, or is it something good will come, or something will come of this, or Or is it a belief that you've built up because you've seen over time and over doing it a couple of times that it does work out, that that's what's allowing you to do it more easily?
Like a combination. So at the time as well, like in that kind of, I was very good at my job, and I was no, not known, known, but in if the where I lived was a relatively small area, so kind of everyone knew everyone, and I was like, worst comes to worst, I will just go and get another bartending job. You know, there's always it's the industry, it's an industry where there's always people, there's always businesses that need staff. So I was just like, well, I'll give it some time, see what happens. Worst comes to worst, I'll just go and be a bartender again and then figure it out from there. So I think it's always been this balance of, right, I'm gonna create the space and trust that it's gonna work out, but also I'm not unwilling to have to go and do things that maybe aren't what I want to be doing to make my life work. So it's always been that kind of balance of that, yeah, creating space, but going, well, do what needs to be done if it comes to that. But normally I haven't had to do what needs to be done because it has worked out.
Amazing. Okay, and that's when Rafiki came into your life. Okay, now we're at
Exactly. So
Rafiki.
I handed my notice in, and then pretty much sort of straight after I handed my notice in, so a friend of mine has got in Wiltshire or the southwest in the UK. He's a shepherd and he's got his own working border collies. A couple of his collies had an accidental litter, so we just went to go and see the puppies.
We
No.
all know that it
Which is like the
doesn't work
exact
that
way that I've
way.
always told people to like not like, you know, don't go and get a dog in that way. But there we are. Came across her, fell in love, made sure, went back again, and I was really adamant. I was like, it cannot be based on her because she was like, she's beautiful now. She was adorable as a puppy, and she had floppy ears as a puppy as well. So I went back and sort of saw her again, and just really because there was one other puppy that I was quite keen on, and I sort of really made sure it was personality based and nothing to do with sort of a physical appearance, and it was still Rafiki that I was really attached to and drawn to. So just sort of again, had luckily I'd been quite on it with my finances, so worked out again, okay, there's enough where I could get her and then sort of scrape by for the next couple of months. And then, you know, my partner had, you know, he was in a managerial position, so you know, his pay wasn't like terrible. So luckily I was in a position where that was a possibility. So ended up, I didn't have a day off, basically. I didn't have a break. I had my last day at my job, and then the next day had Rafiki
Basically the
home.
textbook of how in a sense of how not to get a dog,
Oh,
you know.
completely and utterly. Yeah, like working 14, 16 hour days, and then having barely any time to prepare, and then the day after you finish, sorry. The day after you finish having the new puppy, high energy, intense puppy come home is, you know, probably not the best way to do things, and definitely not how I'd recommend someone to do it. So anyone listening, don't do it. And I did. I cried every single day for that first week bringing her home because she was so, and still is, but I can deal with it now. But she was so intense. And also, again, haven't even touched on this yet, but we had, it's not that unique a situation. I think people just don't talk about it very much. Our other dog, Nala, was very dog aggressive. So we were already being quite ballsy by bringing Rafiki home, but we were like, well, we can make it work. So we had to have them both separated in the house. So it was like doing, you know,
More than double the work.
having to do them each individually. And, you know, obviously my ex-partner was still working chef hours. So a lot of it then was like me just with the dogs in the house and trying to sort of do them both together. Yes, it was hard. It was very, very hard. And it's something I've actually not really talked about particularly because I think I've still had a lot that I haven't maybe fully processed or dealt with. But so with Nala, she,
bless her, I don't want people to listen and think that she's a terrible dog. She's a gorgeous dog, but she tried to kill Rafiki on quite a lot of occasions. Rafiki's got scars from where Nala tried to kill her. So I've got a lot of sort of potentially unhealed trauma from that I haven't quite dived into yet, but I'm very aware of. So there was a lot of stress and anxiety actually in the beginning of Rafiki's life, and that wasn't necessarily the most helpful thing for both of us,
But what was really
fantastic was, and basically
kind of what got me into the dog world, is so Nala was our deep dive into the dog world. So when we got her, we were like, we're good with dogs. And to a degree we were, but we were still very oblivious to actually like dog behavior and body language and, you know, reactivity and anxious behaviors and things like that. So we rehomed Nala from Romania, you know, expecting things to go a certain kind of way, and obviously they did not, and we did so many things wrong in the beginning as well. But obviously we didn't know any better, didn't really get any support from the rehoming center. And Nala, bless her, had been at the age of 6 months, between the age of 6 months to 9 months, or 10, 6 months, 10 months, she'd been in three different foster homes in the UK through no fault of her own. It had just been that like one home had her for like a month, and then their circumstances changed, so they had to like move her. And it was, so we ended up collecting her from London. We had to drive all the way down to London. So that was about a 2.5 hour drive. She was car sick the entire way back. And Rob, my previous partner, he had to sit in the back of the car with her the whole way, and she was puking everywhere, bless her. So that was all quite sort of stressful. And then she had all of her sort of issues. It was so difficult with her, and we couldn't leave her on her own. She was like ripping up the sofa. She was trying to chew through the door frames, you know, like really, really intense. And obviously we were both in the hospitality industry, working hospitality hours. Aww. And having, you know, we had separate days off so we could, you know, be with her. And we had dog walkers come on the days that we were both working. But then it was just getting to a point where we couldn't do it. So my partner, he left. And at the time we were working at the same place together, he left his job and I think he was off for 8 weeks, and he did some like really intensive sort of stuff with her. And then obviously when I wasn't working, I was involved as well. And we really kind of helped. We did help get her to a point of being a lot more comfortable in our sort of home environment. And he was able to
then return to work. Oh, wait, no, I tell a lie
there. No, so he was off for about 8 weeks and then got offered a really good job opportunity. So he took that job opportunity. So then I left my job and I was off for about a month. And then we managed to get her to a point where she could be left. For like enough periods of time where we could just have the dog walker come and she would be okay. And
it was all just, yeah, wow, now I think about it.
It was all very chaotic. and we could just kept doing so many different things wrong. So actually it's one of those things where you look back at it and you go, if we'd done this, then this probably would never have happened, or, you know, this wouldn't have developed in the way it had. And you can very easily spiral into that. And I, you know, I'm a very different
person now than I was then, and I used to spiral really badly. I used to feel like I had, or sort of resonate very much with sort of having anxiety and depression, and I really, really struggled. And then having all of that on
top of it as well was really, really difficult. And I also got to a point, so Nala would, she was dog aggressive and reactive and anxious about every single thing in the world. And we managed to get her, build her confidence up basically through everything apart from the dog aggression. But she would redirect. So she, you know, bitten me and my previous partner many more times than me, because I got to a point where actually I stopped walking her because I couldn't cope with it anymore.
Yeah.
That was really, really hard. And then, and I'm like, looking back at it now, I have no idea. I must have known that I needed Rafiki. I had no idea why either of us thought it would be a good idea to...
This would have been my question. Like, okay, so yeah. You have Nala with all that additional stress.
Yeah.
And then get another puppy. And I'm sure also that people in your surroundings had something to say about that.
Yeah.
How did you deal with all of that?
Were very much like, just... what did they say? They said, like, just get a new one. Just send her back and get a new one. And we were like, she's a living being. Like, we're not just sending her back to get a new one. There were, you know, our family. It was really, really difficult because no one in our family had ever encountered a dog like her. And they, you know, we would try to explain the like the gravity of her behavior and how much we had to manage our environment and her interactions with the world. Because also she was human, like she was absolutely petrified of people to begin with as well. So, and actually my dad brought this up the other day. It's really interesting. He mentioned about how he just had remembered how when they first came round to the house after we'd got her, like she couldn't even be in the same room as my parents without going at, you know, it was fear, it was completely fear-based, that response was, but she just would go absolutely ballistic. And that took a lot. So basically, like our world completely shrunk when we got her. And obviously, you know, when you get a dog, you're getting your dog to expand your world and to go out and go on adventures and do all the
Chat with all
nice
these nice
things.
people and have them play on the beach with all the other dogs.
Exactly. Yeah. And we had the absolute opposite of that. And so, yeah, there was lots of it was difficult to try and explain to people. But then, obviously, it kind of, yeah, was our deep dive into actually, God, okay, we need to figure this out. We need to understand what's going on. We sought help from multiple different sort of trainers and behaviorists with like varying degrees of being actually helpful or not. What I have learned along the way, and actually it's been quite helpful, is like you're never going to learn everything from one person. And actually, it's better, in my opinion, to work with multiple people because everyone shows up in the world with their own unique sort of perspective and experiences and approaches. And then you can kind of just cherry pick what works for you and then create a way and a sort of a formula that works for you. So in a way, that was helpful. In hindsight, at the time, it wasn't helpful. So a lot of money has time and energy and effort sort of was injected into trying to make things work. Many a conversation had about actually, you know, rehoming her or speaking to the rescue about returning her. And obviously we never actually went through with it, but it was, you know, even now I'm just recalling a time of sort of sitting on the stairs, sobbing my eyes out because it just felt so restricting and terrible. And I felt like, you know, it was awful for us and for her as well at times. And my previous partner also had a son who would come and stay with us each week. So it was trying to juggle. And obviously we were still in the hospitality industry. So our days off were spent like trying to work through things with Nala and then also having a child to look after as well. So it was all of the things.
What kept you from rehoming her or from returning
It
her
was
to the
just
rescue?
this sort of with we were able to recognize that actually like the level of intensity of her behavior was just so beyond the norm. Like it wasn't and still isn't to this day. It's truly aggression, like it's not reactivity. And we were like, she will get put down. Like the you know, she will get put down. Unless we were able to find someone that we knew who we knew had, and like by this time we'd done such an intense like deep dive, like we were a fountain of knowledge and understanding about dogs then. So we were like, we would know if someone was capable of looking after her. And we didn't know anyone. And we were like, if we send her back to the rescue center, who provided us barely any support, then, you know, she's just going to get put down. So we're like, we've got to just try and make this work and do the best that we can. And we were seeing improvements, and it was getting better. I think a big part of it, and especially again, this is the whole hindsight thing, is if I had been able to, because a lot of it ended up falling on my previous partner, because I got to that point of anxiety where it got so hard for me to even take her out that he was having to do so much of the work with her. And they'd already formed this quite strong bond from that first 8 weeks when it just been kind of those two most of the time. And if I had done the inner work, if I had learned ways to regulate myself, if I'd learned ways to sort of reframe different situations, if I had done some more subconscious work, if I'd sort of done things like that, I feel like it would have been different and it would have gone differently. It maybe would have been quicker and easier to help her because she would have been having more opportunities to sort of experience the world in a more positive way. But because so much of it was falling on my previous partner and I wasn't at the time able to do so much, it didn't. And then I felt so much, it was this horrible sort of loop of like, I would feel really guilty and like terrible for not taking her out and not walking her. And then
it would just be this sort of horrible cycle of just sort of degrading myself and feeling really bad about it, but then not actually doing anything. And then just sort of, oh, then I'd try and do it and then something would happen because I was just really pushing myself. I was trying, but then obviously because that's the place that I was coming from and I didn't have the tools to cope with things and to deal with things, then something would happen and then I wouldn't be able to cope with that. And then rather than being able to see it as just one small event and then go, oh, well, that all these other wonderful things happen, that thing would be the thing and would be so sort of overwhelming and overpowering everything else that then that would write me off from feeling able of doing anything with her for ages afterwards. So it was really, and then it was causing strain with my previous partner because he was like, why aren't you walking her? Why aren't you taking her out? Why aren't you doing X, Y, and Z? And he struggled with understanding my anxiety around it and couldn't really see, like, he was like, you just walk her, you just do this, you just do that. He was much more practical minded.
Yeah, the famous, why don't you just get over it? Like, let it slide off. It's just an incident. Go take her. And you're like, yeah, I can't.
Exactly. And like the number of times where I would, I'd get her lead on, I'd get her muzzle on, I'd get all the snacks ready, I would be fully dressed, ready to go out. And I would just be either sitting or standing at the door, and she would be with me. And then I would be trying to kind of like be like, come on, we can do this, let's go. Like, all we have to do is like, we could just go to there and then back again. Like, we don't have to do a full walk. Having to try and talk myself into it. And then most of the time I would then just be like, nope, can't do it, and not go at all. And then again slip back into that kind of degrading myself and feeling really bad
You
about
didn't even
myself
get out
now.
the door. All you had to do was cross the street and you didn't even open the door. Yeah. So I have a feeling, because you said, and I very much recognize this, and also in the clients that I help. You said if I'd done the inner work, right, which is dealing with your nervous system, and okay, I'm not going to go into what all of that work is, but my idea is that Rafiki helped you in some way then start to do that inner work. And I'm really curious as to how that links together, because you're dealing with this what really sounds like a tough dog. You get a puppy, you have all the work stress. Was it then that there was just no other option than to do the inner work, or what, how did Rafiki tie into all of this?
So she really kind of opened up my world to what life could be like, an alternative way of living life with a dog that maybe was more aligned to my original vision of, of what it would be like to bring a dog into my life. And also from the deep dive and all the learning and knowledge that I had gained through Nala. And that was just quickly, I won't dive fully back into that, but just touch on that. That was something that always frustrated me as well, is because I knew everything I needed to do with Nala, but I couldn't do it. Like, there was that mental blockage from being able to actually implement it, which was always very frustrating. But then with Rafiki, I was able to mitigate and stop a lot of potentially problem behaviors. I'm doing air quotations there for anyone listening. I was able to implement these things with her before they could grow and progress and escalate. And I was able to, like, she's a very Intense, sensitive, big feeling dog, Rafiki is. And there's lots of things that I did wrong, again, air quotations, as a puppy, and that I would do differently now. But actually, there was so much that I was able to sort of, help her on her path to sort of actually being able to comfortably exist in the world. And then I was like, well, this is really not like we can go out places, we can go into public places, we can do things. And then it was like, okay, let's try out some like classes, and took her to puppy class, and she was just, we were like the stars of the class, and it was really good. And then they did other classes there, and
So I've sort of dabbled my toes in things like scent work and agility and bite work and searching and man trailing and all these different things. So it was really, as well, for me, confidence wise, my relationship was very codependent. We did everything together. But now it was like, well, he's at work all the time and I'm here with the dogs. So it was just me taking her to these kind of events and things like that, which I never would have done before. I wouldn't have gone to something by myself, but because it was for her and it was with her, it was different. So it was that sort of like opening the door up a little bit and going, oh, okay, this is a new way of being and living. And then it sort of.
kind of progressed from there. And I think then once I started feeling more confident in those ways with her, then that started seeping more into
Sort of entering new spaces without her. So actually, then I sort of started formulating some friendships and getting to know some people outside of her that were more in sort of living more holistic lives and sort of health lifestyles and things like that. So I started attending sort of more things in that area. I was also, so I had a few months off over summer while she was a puppy, and then I did start working again, and I had two part-time jobs. I had one part-time job as a sort of shop cafe assistant in a dog pet shop, and then I had another part-time job. I know, so that was very very helpful. And then there was the part-time job as a receptionist at a chiropractor. So that was another real introduction more into the holistic side of health and well-being. And it's also something like holistic health and well-being is something that has always been a part of my life. So like my parents have always sort of, utilized Chinese medicine, and I'd had, as a teenager, I'd had acupuncture. I'd been, my parents had done Reiki one, and massage. We had been very fortunate where my parents took me and my twin brother backpacking around India for 3.5 months when we were 7 years old.
Already like your parents, I think.
Yeah, they're very cool people. They are very cool people. So that had already been like a thread throughout my life anyway. So it wasn't like this whole, I'd never experienced any kind of holistic healing modalities before. But I think before then, it had more been like, well, mum and dad have booked me these appointments, so I'm going to go to them, and and that kind of thing. So then working at the chiropractor, and then I started receiving chiropractic care, which was fantastic. So I got that included in my job role, so that was great.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I got back from chiropractor 2 days ago. Okay, I was really feeling kind of banged up after for a little bit, but it helped
Yeah,
so
it does, like
much.
sometimes you feel a bit worse before you feel better. But that was then sort of like, oh wow, okay, like this is,
and that was then more sort of the nervous system and understanding the nervous system more. And then actually she, my wonderful boss, she introduced me to a podcast with a man called Dr. Chatterjee. He does a podcast all about sort of health and well-being and different sort of healing modalities. And it just sort of, when you just have those breadcrumbs and you just sort of, and those things kind of naturally evolve and kind of unravel. So I feel like it was a whole mixture of events in terms of the COVID happening, seeing that there was another way of living and enjoying having more time and, sleeping better and eating better. And then obviously then having her and being able to see that I could go and be in new environments and new places and learn new things and do things without the codependency of my relationship. So yeah, it was all of those kind of things together, and it's just continued to kind of snowball since then. Yeah, she's definitely been a big catalyst for a lot of change, and I've been through a lot of change this past year, and she's been like my constant through all of that, which has been really, really wonderful. But I can't even remember the question now.
I think it was about like how Rafiki helped you into this, doing the self-care or just the self-work and all of that. And I'm just thinking, if you had to say or like come up with a major belief about yourself in the time that you call like with the codependency of the relationship and the Nala time and now? Is there a shift? Like what would your self-talk about you have been then and what would it be now or what is it now?
Oh, completely different. I'm a completely unrecognizable person that compared to the person that I was then. I have changed fundamentally. I was very, I actually had some life coaching during that time as well. And again, it's just how all the things sort of the timing of everything lines up. My mum was learning to be a life coach. And she was on a course where someone needed, someone to be their guinea pig. So I was like, well, I've never done this before, got some free life coaching. It was very helpful. And we actually sort of named my, so we have, I had my negative narrator. So it was just this constant voice and everything, it was just, everything was negative. Everything was wrong. It was, everything's out to get me. It was, everything's rubbish. It was, everything's fearful. Like I used to be so anxious that I once tried to go to a gym class and I had a panic attack in the car park and had to turn around and go home. I used to sit on the stairs for an hour just to try and get myself in a space where I could go to the shop to do the food shop or to go and get petrol. Like I was such a. In such a place where I just couldn't cope with the world. And I was just, it was just, a, I was in survival basically. It was just only getting through each day. Sometimes there would be some nice moments sort of in there, but for the most part, it was just this sort of foggy existence. It was not a nice way of being and existing in the world. And there was lots of times of very deep depression. I would have days in bed where I couldn't get out of bed. It was so bad. I used to get migraines all the time. Yeah, it was not a nice way to exist. There was lots of other things as well sort of going on in my sort of family life and then also with my previous partner, and there was just so many things, and it was all just it was not great. And even though there was lots of times with Rafiki where it was really, really stressful and really, really difficult, she kind of gave me that kind of purpose, gave me a reason to get up and go. And there were times where I questioned whether or not I had it in me to take care of a dog like her because of her intensity. It was hard, but she definitely, I think without her, it would have been probably even worse. Yeah, it's been a big old road, but now I have a completely different perspective on the world, and it's not that I don't have hard things happen anymore. It's just that my perspective has changed around those hard things, and I'm able to see the silver linings and things, and I'm able to see the lessons that can be learned from things and the positives that still happen, even when something feels negative. And that's come from a big, so I left my partner a year ago, almost a year ago, the date, and moved me and Rafiki to the other side of the country, to the Lake District where we didn't know anyone, and started my whole life again. And
Another one of those things where other people might be, how does she do that?
that's part of I've got a bit of a new life purpose now where I'm still going to be in the dog world, and I'm still it's still a big part of my life, but I'm definitely moving more towards now supporting people on their sort of journeys in life and sort of how to make changes in their life so they can have a more enjoyable life. So that's been another sort of organic evolution along this wild journey that I've been on.
Yeah, it sounds wild, but I love where you're at because I think what we're doing is similar, if not the same. And I think what I'm hearing you say, the way I approach mindset work and all of that is there's certain circumstances and then there's what we're making them mean. And certain circumstances are just, I'm just going to say, like incredibly hard. So then it's really, really hard to think positively. And I never really want to go to the whole toxic positivity thing because I just think we should also be able to believe, yes, this sucks. But what it sounds like is also that the situation or the circumstance that you were in with Nala made it very difficult to think positively or to be confident about yourself. And then what Rafiki did was open up that possibility a little bit and go, okay, but wait a minute, if I'm training with Rafiki, this is actually working and that's working and this is going well. And Oh, I can do all these things. And then once you had that, you could sort of transpose that thought to other situations as well, allowing you to get out of this negativity spiral to break through it. Okay, this is just my sort of like from what I've just heard now interpretation, but tell me if that's what's going on.
Yes, definitely. Like she really helped kind of renew my confidence in myself and my capabilities. And yeah, just kind of brought a bit of that because, we like one of our favorite things to do together is playing. And we've always loved playing tug. And she really helped me. I've always been a bit sort of old for my age and sort of grew out of play quite quickly when I was younger. So actually she kind of helped me tap back into that inner child a bit more as well, and sort of play and let go and have fun. And yeah, sort of opened my world up to, yeah, different possibilities and different ways of sort of being. And she also actually really helped with things like boundaries, implementing boundaries. That was something I used to find incredibly difficult. It was so difficult that in the beginning with her, so she loves people, gets really overexcited about people. She's a lot better now, but she still does have those moments where it bursts out of her, bless her. But when she was a puppy, it was really intense. And she used to like pee with excitement every time she saw my dad and just get so overexcited. So I was, I had to sort of say to my family that, like, I really need you to just be really calm, because they would be like, and making a whole big party out of it, and sort of not helping support her in sort of, being able to sort of be calm. And I had to, I couldn't even have, I was at that point where I couldn't even have an in-person conversation with my family about those boundaries, because I knew I wouldn't be able to get it out in person. I wouldn't have the confidence, even to my parents and to my brother and to my family members, to say, I need you to not do this, or I need you to do this. So I had to send a text to my family and basically just say, look, these are the boundaries that I need. Like, please respect them. And for me, that was, God, I haven't even thought about that until now, but I remember being so anxious, writing, rewriting it, reading it over and over again before sending it. And I've got lovely parents and a lovely brother, and not they're not the kind of people that would sort of berate me for anything or anything like that. But I
just had this anxiety that, like, I couldn't say what I needed to say, but actually.
if that had been about me, I wouldn't have said it at all. But because it was about her, and I was thinking,
Well, this is affecting her. This is affecting how she's showing up in the world. This is affecting how we're enjoying our time together. So it's something that needs to be done and needs to be said. And the more, and then obviously out in public with her, and trying to work through lots of things with her, build up her exposure and her comfortability with existing in the world, I was doing more and more and more work on.
communicating those boundaries and implementing those boundaries. And that's been huge for me, absolutely huge. And something is, it's, even I was even celebrating myself just yesterday.
I've been taking her into town intentionally to sort of be around more people and things like that. And we were just by a coffee van, and a man, bless him, very sweetly, obviously has dogs, pulled a treat out from his pocket and, started walking over to give it to her. And I just sort of, very like gently just sort of moved in front of him and just said, oh, no, thank you. She's just learning to exist around people, and having a snack's not going to help her with her getting overexcited. And I could tell he didn't really like it. Like, he was an older man, quite sort of.
I don't think maybe used to someone saying
No.
no.
He wasn't rude, he wasn't anything, but it shut him down quite a lot. And before, I definitely, and this is something that I really recognized in myself yesterday, before I would have then in my head, my internal monologue would have been like, oh my God, was I rude? Was it, and is he
Yep.
thinking X, Y, and Z about me now? And now is it really uncomfortable because we're both having to stand here still? And it's all, but actually, yesterday, I almost sort of slipped into that. And then I've got to a point now where I can kind of catch myself and be like, no, like, it's fine. You can just stand here. Like, it doesn't have to be anything or mean anything. You have no idea. Maybe he's just got a sort of a resting, stony face. And
All of those things. It is so funny because I gave a webinar on like relationships and dealing with other people yesterday.
Yeah, I'm so sorry I couldn't make that. I hope it went really well.
That's fine because but the example I used was precisely setting boundaries for your family when they come over and they don't respect sort of what you are wanting them to do. So, for example, the overly exciting your dog when it's not practical, and also meeting strangers on the street like this person. And I think the tip that I gave then, and I'll give it here on the podcast too for people who are listening, is to figure out or to realize that the negative emotions that might be felt by others are completely appropriate. If your parents wouldn't care about you saying no to them, that would also kind of be weird. Why? Like they care about Rafiki, they care about seeing the dog, they love her. And oh, wait, what? Now I can't do that. So maybe for them, that is also something along the lines of, oh, I have to rethink my approach to dogs. Have I been doing it wrong maybe in the past? So there's that. Then there's the nobody wants to hear no from their daughter because we love each other, so all of those emotions are appropriate. And also for you, for example, with this gentleman trying to feed a cookie and then being a little bit disappointed, for you to have that thought of, oh, am I being rude, is also completely appropriate because it just means that you don't like making people feel uncomfortable. It just means that you care for people and that you care for treating people right. And if you were all happy peppy about, seeing somebody's face sort of go stony or disappointed, that would also, like, I might doubt that I want to be friends with you then, like I would maybe think, is there something else going on with this person? Do they just
Yeah.
like being sadistic or what's that? Right. So so it's the appropriateness of feeling bad in a sense allows you to not sit with it so long. That's the thing that allows for you to let it slide off more easily. Oh, but I recognize this so much. Sorry for this interlude.
No, that's such a really wonderful way of looking at it, and I haven't really. I don't think I'd really thought of it in that way before, but actually, like I've thought about and in much more in a place of not making it mean anything about me when someone has feels something about me or how I've interacted with them or the world. But I haven't thought about it in the way where actually it's like, well, yeah, of course they feel that way. And that's okay. Like I hadn't really thought about that. So that's really helpful. Thank you.
So there you go. That's no need to
Yeah.
attend the webinar. We're doing a sort of semi-live on the podcast. There we go. But I did lose my train of thought kind of now because what I'm still curious to know about is whereabouts and this, moving to the Lake District thing and breaking up with your partner, getting Rafiki, whereabouts did you then become a dog trainer slash coach slash, like holistic lifestyle? I don't even know what to call it. Promotionist. No, that's not a word, but I'm making it up because I can. Where did that shift happen?
So that happened quite in the early days of sort of having Rafiki. I started a social media account for her. I was sharing a lot about the things that we were doing, the work I was doing with her, the classes that we were going to. I was helping out a little bit at some of the classes as well. And when Rafiki had a season and I couldn't take her to classes, there was a class that we were taking Nala to that was for sort of reactive dogs. So we were like building up her confidence around other dogs at that class. So me and my partner were going, but he was handling Nala. So they also at that where they held the classes, they also were helping. So they were they bred dogs for the police force. So they had some like shepherd puppies and things like that. So I was able to kind of work with them and do some things with them and just sort of really kind of reinforce my confidence in my capabilities and my skills. And then had people sort of seeking me out for support and sort of for help. So it was quite an organic, natural sort of progression. It wasn't like I sort of sat down one day and went, what am I going to do with my life? Aha, I'm going to start my own dog training business. It was a very natural progression. And then I sort of saw a need for Actually, I tell a lie. I tell a lie. I had already started before we started taking Nala to the reactivity classes at that class centre. What I had done was I had sort of recognised a lack of spaces where you could take your nervous or reactive dog to work on being able to exist around other dogs and people in a safe and secure environment. So I just, and it wasn't with the intention of it being a training class to start with, it was just, right, can I just create a space where there's people that just want to work on their, like, whatever training they're doing or whatever sort of system they're trying to implement? Can I create a space where people can kind of come and do that, but they know it's like secure in the sense that there's not just any old dog going to come charging in kind of thing. All the dogs are going to be on a lead and what have you. And there was a local sort of dog walking field, like an enclosed field. So I contacted them and then did some research, got insurance, got my first aid, and then just advertised it with the intention of it just being a sort of a space where people came and did their own thing. But then it very much became a, like, people came and wanted me to to support them and to help them. So it just sort of really naturally sort of grew and developed from there, actually. And I really loved it. I really loved, and at the time I didn't recognize this, but I really loved helping people. I really loved being able to, and I think as well, and I'm sure you're probably familiar with it, but the dog training world can be quite an overwhelming place, and there's lots of information, and I think there's, again, I don't want to go into this at all, but with the sides, with all of that, it can, it's just, it doesn't help people, and I think people get confused and lost in it all. The way I have always taught things, even from the beginning, has just been very Simple but very understanding.
understanding of the person and making what I'm teaching them match them and their learning style and their sort of life. So it's never been, I've worked personally with trainers in the past where it's like, here's your list of things to do, off you go and do them. And I'd be like, well, that's all well and good, but I've got this mental blockage, or actually my learning style is different or what have you. So I always kind of had that approach that was very, I think at the time, especially in my local area, it was very unique because of my sort of more understanding of a holistic approach to living from my childhood and growing up. I kind of had that view and understanding of that with your dog. So again, it was never a case of do this one thing and everything will be resolved. It was always let's look at all of the parts and see how they are all interacting with each other and affecting things and what have you. So yeah, it sort of kind of naturally grew and progressed from there. And then I was offering, I was doing one-to-ones, I was doing weekly puppy classes, and then it evolved to be Dodge Distractions, which was the, I don't even know how I came up with that name.
It's a nice
But
alliteration. I
yeah,
like it.
I obviously wanted it to be catchy. And that was a really wonderful space. And I had, there was some really amazing progression with people with their dogs in that. And even just for people to have a space where they could bring their dog where they normally wouldn't ever be able to go, because so many classes you see on the advertisement, which is understandable and I appreciate it, but you'll see on the advertisement that reactive and rescue dogs can't go, or well, not rescue dogs, sorry, nervous dogs can't go. It's not a suitable environment for them, and I completely understand and appreciate that, but it always felt really important for me to create spaces where you could go and have that, because obviously, as I had already experienced through Nala, you are trying to progress with your dog, but taking your reactive or nervous dog out into the public to try and do that in an uncontrolled
It's too
environment,
unpredictable.
it's too unpredictable and it's not fair on you or your dog. So it was really important to me because basically, everything along my journey, I have created everything I have done, and still to this day, like even the most recent offerings that I have created have been born of, they were what I needed and I didn't have, and it's, that's kind of where it's come from. So that's where that class came from, was actually we really needed a space like that with Nala and we didn't have that, so I wanted to create spaces for other people and also to have a place where you could go without judgment. I think as well, when you have a nervous or reactive dog, is so much of it, and if this is part of what I would do in the class as well, is I would, there was a lot of it that was talking and wasn't actually really doing anything. It was just talking about obviously dealing with people's, potential judgments and responses to when your dog reacts and things like that. Because obviously, when you're out in public, unfortunately, a lot of the general public aren't approaching the world, or at least that I have encountered in the past, aren't necessarily coming from a place of empathy and compassion, and are quite can tend to have quite quick judgment reactions.
When you hear people making comments about your dog when they've reacted or responded, or making comments about what you're doing, or even people that mean really well
And are trying to be helpful and are saying, have you done this? Do this, do that.
Yep.
It's just so much. It's really hard, and it's really, you're trying to deal with all of that. Then you're trying to deal with people and you're getting stressed and anxious. Your dog's getting stressed and anxious. So actually creating a space where you could go. And some of the dogs used to have explosive, really big reactions, and no one would bat an eyelid. Everyone would just be like, oh, okay. And to have that space for your dog to have a reaction like that and no one care, I think was really healing for a lot of people. So it was, yeah, that's a space that I'm really proud of creating. And yeah, I feel a bit emotional about that.
Yeah, but I think that isn't that the thing, right? Because other people's judgment so easily gets translated into self-judgment, right? Oh, it
Yes.
must be me that's doing something wrong then. There's something to it. And then when there's so much value and so much power in hearing other people who are going through the same thing, because then it allows you to think and believe much more easily, oh, this isn't all on me. This isn't all my fault. It's because if they're having the same issue and if they're having the same thing and them too, oh, then maybe this is between air quotes normal, because of course our rough around the edges dogs aren't the norm. I would say, or they don't, maybe I shouldn't say that, don't make up the majority of the dog population.
Although interesting, I do feel like actually I it's the genuinely really well-rounded, sort of grounded, chilled out dogs that don't have any kind of anxiety or form of reactivity are actually, in my personal opinion, I'm sure there might be people that disagree with me, but in what I have seen, are actually fewer and far between. And I think people have either just become desensitized to their dog's behaviors, or don't necessarily recognize. So, like the number of people where, because they don't understand and haven't learned how to read dog body language, they aren't recognizing that their dog is nervous or anxious, or they are, the dog is displaying reactive behaviors, but they maybe, again, because of societal and cultural conditioning, aren't willing to acknowledge that and sort of do anything about it. So that's saying, it's just my dog being a dog, or it's just, I don't know. I feel like my experience is that most dogs, unfortunately, have some kind of a something going on in varying degrees of intensity.
I think I take back my statement, especially because I'm just right now I'm just thinking back to my last walks with Rusty, and I realize precisely what you're saying. There's the two Chihuahuas that we always meet that are always barking. Then there's a bunch of border collies who react to Rusty, but who just get a shut up, or like stop it, or something of the sort. And then there's so yes, I think I may have to rethink that. And also even the off-leash dogs that I see at the dog beach where I swim and where I then obviously go without Rusty, so it gives me some time to actually study their body language, which normally I don't have time for because I'm too focused on my own dog. I also see a lot of ignorance, or where people are like, okay, this is play. And I'm looking at the dogs and I'm thinking,
You're like, no, it's not. It's definitely not play.
this is not play. This is too pushy. This is just one dog being super tolerant. But yeah, so I might indeed have to rephrase that and rethink that. Maybe it's that the combination of guardian who is in tune with body language and who sees what's going on and who's knowledgeable with a dog, maybe they're in the minority.
I think that's definitely, at least from where my sort of experience perspective is coming from, I think that's more of an accurate sort of description. I think unfortunately there's a real lack of knowledge and understanding and awareness about
dog body language and communication. And I think you can get into a bit of a bubble of assuming that.
everyone sort of knows, and then you encounter people who sort of still are like, oh, they're wagging their tails so they're happy, and you're like, oh no. And but that's still a very, actually, for I think a lot of the general public, that is still very much yeah, their tail's wagging so they're happy, or they're rolling over and showing their belly so they want their belly to be rubbed. It's like those are the things that are like actually really still prevalent, because it's not. And this is something I would love, is that actually for part of bringing a dog into your life is actually, having some form of potentially like mandatory learning and education on dog body language. I think you could probably mitigate a lot of potential sort of distress for people and their animals if we had something like that. But I don't think that will probably ever get introduced, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I think I've been thinking about this a lot because I also think it's be careful what you wish for kind of situation. I know there's a lot of talk in the Netherlands about introducing something like this, sort of a pet owner passport-ish thing where you do a bit of training. But then the question is, which trainers are going to be consulted, or which so-called specialists are going to have the biggest say in the matter? Is it the ones we like, so to say, or is it the louder ones that are, coming from more of a dog should be in their place type background? So it is, I am in favor of it, but with the caveat of like, let it be, some people who are really into behavioral science and all of that, and who are empathic and care for the dogs. But I'm not necessarily sure that those would be the people that then.
No, and I think you're right there. Like, I think like the sort of it would be in an ideal world, and I guess it's probably the same for so many different things in life, really. Like, actually, we could all do with them, like humans reading each other's body language and different communication styles, things like that. Like, in an ideal world, we'd all get taught those things in school, and we don't. So I think it's one of those things where, again, like how we were saying before about, being able to see things in a different light. It's like, well, that would be nice if that was the way things were, but actually, this is the way things are, and we can make the best of these situations with our sort of knowledge and understanding. And then we can't control how other people are living their life with their dog. And that's sort of one thing I used to feel really frustrated. I would see people doing things or saying things, and it used to really upset me. And I used to really not be able to switch off from it. And I'd be out on a walk, and my parents would be like, oh God, don't look over there at like what they're doing with their dog. And I'd be like, oh God, like, and actually, I've just got much more to a place now of I can do what I can do. And if someone sees me doing something and goes, oh, that's a different way of doing things, or oh, I like the look of that, or oh, I wonder if I could learn more about that, then amazing. But like, I can't go around and expend all my energy on feeling upset and anxious about how other people are doing things with their dog. And I can't just go up to people and be like, you shouldn't be doing this with your dog, you should be doing this instead, because who's going to receive that in public? Like, I wouldn't receive that very well if someone
No,
did
for
that to
sure.
me. So I have really changed my perspective. There are still things that I see that I'm like, actually, I don't want to be seeing that. That's distressing. But I, it's not that I've switched off my compassion or my empathy. It's just that actually I am more, I think, intentional about where I'm focusing that.
Yeah, I've heard it described. Actually, was in an email by Kara Lowenthal. She's an amazing feminist life coach, and she described it as there's a middle ground. There is the OMG, the world is burning. Okay, everything is all right. The world's burning, everything is all right. The world's burning, everything is all right. And then in the end, you're burned to a crisp yourself. Or there's the world's burning. Let me try to put out the fire all by myself. Not going to work because you're going to burn out. You're not going to burn up, but you're going to burn out. Or there's the middle ground, which is the world's on fire. what is within my control, what can I do, how can I contribute. And I've also found that I think the best way to contribute is to really tap into who we are, what's important to us, and then show up living that, show up embodying that. I think the most sort of wins I've also gotten was from people who just approached me on the street and said, "Why are you walking Rusty in a long line?" And I'd be like, "Oh, because I want him to have the opportunity to sniff." And so they would ask me about these things and then just, be on their way. That would be it. And then a while later, they would maybe come back and go, "Do you know, I've been trying all this, like shouting at my dog and things, and it didn't work. And I actually think there might be something to the way you're doing things. Can you tell me more about it?" Which is, that's where the change is, right? Whereas if I were to go and say, "Maybe walk your dog on a long line, or maybe do this, or maybe do that," I'd be like, "Excuse me, I think I know how to interact with my dog. Thank you very much." Right. So there's that. And I think it's really this, like you said, like finding your own. Like what you've been doing lately really is that this is where I want to go. I think this is where my path is leading. Let me just follow it. The more everybody does what they're passionate about and what they feel good about and what's really them, I think that's my way of making the world a better place. Helping people find that part, and not listening to what the teacher in high school said or what society says, like that's not something you can do. But, empowering people, giving them the guts to go, "Well, let me just see if maybe that's what I can do," but not let the world burn down and us to a crisp with it, which it's, I think at the moment, it's very easy to get into that funk of everything's going to pieces and there's nothing we can do. When we get into that mindset, then we get into the negative spiral, well, where they're really isn't anything we can do anymore.
I used to have like an existential crisis pretty much every week,
Yeah.
and be like, what's the point? Like, what is the point in it all? And I went had a sort of phase of being quite an extreme, like eco warrior, and I got to a point where actually my mum was quite concerned because I was like, I wouldn't throw anything in the bin, I wouldn't waste anything, I would like it was just. Yeah, it just got quite extreme. And it was, I think, again, my way of trying to cope and find some kind of a something like, like, why am I here on this planet and all of this horrible stuff going on? And then, yeah, it's only sort of really been in this again since I've had this sort of, I've had a lot of life change, but this last year has been the most significant. It's really sort of in this time that I've kind of learned and sort of embodying what you were talking about of, you can do what you can do, and sort of, if people want to learn from that or pick things up from that, then amazing. But like, you can't try and change the whole world by yourself. Like, it's not possible. And it's, the more you feel like that weight is on your shoulders, then the more you're just going to sink and not be able to even sort of enjoy your life. Intention now is really important to me. So, there probably are things now that I do in my life that aren't so eco-friendly, but actually the intention behind them is, is with good intention for me to have a satisfying and enjoyable life, not in excess and not fed by consumerism or capitalism. But actually sometimes, unfortunately, the world we live in has been built to, in on systems that aren't necessarily always great for the environment. And as a member of that society, sometimes I have to do things and partake in things that aren't beneficial for the environment. And I think that mindset shift has really helped me kind of not feel like a terrible person for buying something in plastic packaging or, going on a flight somewhere or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking at the time, and we knew this was going to go long because we kind of figured that out as soon as we got on the call, which is fine. But I just want to say, like, we probably haven't even touched on a lot of things. Is there, tell me, is there something that you want to get off your chest or that you really want to talk about? Because we should talk about it now then.
I think, to be honest, really, I think actually talking about Nala was really wonderful, because that's something. So people who have been following me on social media since day one know all about Nala and, my relationship with her and her relationship with Rafiki.
but I had sort of quite an influx of new sort of followers actually like not long after I sort of left that relationship and moved. So there's a lot of people that don't know anything about Nala. So she always feels like a little bit of like a not a secret, but like a hidden sort of thing. And obviously she's had a really big impact on my journey and my life and where I am now today in terms of what I'm doing and what I'm offering the world. So sometimes it feels like a bit of a sort of a bit weird that people don't know about her, but then also I feel like it would be even weirder to just randomly.
Not weirder, but it would feel formative if I were to sort of talk about her for sort of no reason whatsoever, apart from to kind of talk about things that I don't know. It feels like it feels very much like I've had two lives, and it feels very much like she's part of a previous life, and this is my new life now. And so I think there's been an element of it where I haven't really wanted to dredge up too much of the past in that way. But also I know that there are lots of aspects of the things that I had to deal with her and live through with her that probably are very relatable to people on their journeys with their dogs. But yeah, I think maybe that's been something I've not, it's something that's crossed my mind is talking about her. I think that talking about her now has actually been really wonderful. I actually think that even if this had been only like a few months ago, I probably would have still maybe felt too emotional about it to talk about it. So actually, it's been really nice to talk about that. I think that's, I was very, I've come to this with no expectations. I approached most things in life with very, not low expectations, I don't believe in that, but with just
open to whatever may unfold. So I think apart from sort of talking a bit about her and how she has impacted me in my journey, I don't think there was anything else really that I really wanted to talk about. So if there was anything that you wanted to ask me, then
I find it actually interesting that I think that what you went through with Nala was probably the prerequisite to being able to learn the lessons that Rafiki was there to teach you.
so I don't, I'm at a point in life now where, and this is what I mean about me being a completely different person. And the people that are still in my life from my previous life have made comments about this because I am, the way I view things and approach things, and my perspective on life is just the polar opposite of what it used to be. So I don't regret anything in my life now. So like I have no regrets about anything that happened with Nala. I have no regrets about getting to a point where I couldn't walk her. And then there was a whole layer of that because I started my dog training business as, A dog trainer teaching people with their dogs to train their dogs who had a dog that she couldn't even walk. So there was a lot of layers of
that where I felt like, how can I be doing this and how can I be showing up for people when I can't even get out the front door with my own dog? But I was able to recognize that I had the skills and the knowledge and the tools and the understanding. It was just I had this subconscious mental block that I couldn't get through to get out the door. So like I was able to sort of discern the difference. But yeah, she
see, I can't remember the question. I went off on a tangent there.
I'm thinking if I know, I don't even think it was a question. I think it was
No.
more of a statement that Nala was necessary, yeah,
Yes, she
for you to
was. Yes.
learn.
So yeah, she was. I don't have any regrets at all about what happened and how everything unfolded. Obviously, would it have been wonderful if we hadn't had to have dealt with all of those things, and if she hadn't had to dealt with those things, and if Fiki hadn't had to deal with it all in her early stages, yes, it would have been wonderful. But my life would be completely different now. And I think that's a big part of sort of healing and being on a healing journey is, it doesn't mean that you have to be happy with how things went, but actually you can recognize and see the lessons that they taught you and how it's helped you grow and develop as a person and how it's helped you show up in the world and show up for your dog and for yourself, and that actually those things were required to get where you are today.
Yeah, I think that's it. It's you can still wish that something, didn't happen or would have been different, but it doesn't mean that you would have done it differently because that's, you are who you are now. You wouldn't be who you are now without all of that. You would be a
Exactly.
completely different person. So yeah, just letting go of regret has been a big part of my journey as well. I recognize that very much. One question maybe that I still have is you said that there's been, you know, like Nala had been attacking Rafiki when she was young. Is that something that you've been able to let go of or to?
Yeah, so it wasn't really something that I ever, because even though Nala was more connected to my previous partner, I still had a very deep connection with her. And, you know, I knew who she was at her core wasn't what was coming out in those moments. And, but it was also very traumatic and it was also a really big layer to my relationship because each time it happened, it was when my previous partner had been pushing the boundaries a little bit more. And, you know, we had got them to a point where they could be out on a walk together and be completely fine. And we'd got them to a point in the house where they could, you know, with we'd still have Nala muzzled as a precaution, but you know, they could be on a bed each in the living room as long as one of us was supervising them and be fine and it was okay. And then, you know, obviously we would be progressing, but sometimes my previous partner would push it a little bit too much too soon. And there was a few occasions where Nala wasn't muzzled when they were out on a walk, and so I never walked them both together at the same time without him being there, whereas he would take them both out together on his own. And there was a few times where, you know, he got back from a walk or I got back from work, and you know, Nala had attacked Rafiki, and there was one time where we were both there together. And we were in a pub, and we were in the pub at the area, and there was a fire, and we stupidly let Nala up on the chair with Rob, and then Fiki was just sniffing around, and then Nala sort of attacked Rafiki and almost pushed her into the fire. And Fiki's got they're quite there. You'd have to see them to look at them, but she's got some big scratches across her nose from that. But Fiki's so resilient, like she, you know, she had some work to do. Like she's had some work to do on getting comfortable with being around other dogs in close proximity. But in terms of after all of those individual events, she would bounce back really, really quickly, which I'm very grateful for. Bless her. And then there was another time where I think they were out on a walk and Rob threw the ball and Fiki went to go and get it, and her movement triggered Nala, and Nala went for her, and she and Rob had to pull her off, and Peaky's got sort of puncture wound scars all over her body. So it was that was, I think those because, and there was other times as well where Nala was muzzled and things would be pushed a bit too far, and she would sort of go for her with her muzzle on, and that it was really traumatic to watch and to witness. But it was really difficult because I loved them both. So it wasn't like a stranger's dog attacking your dog. And there's, you know, you've only got emotions for your dog. It was, you know, I feel really deep things for both of them, and I've been through so much with Nala. So there was never any kind of a like, you evil dog or you terrible dog or anything like that, because I knew it wasn't her. Like it was, you know, the it
The
was
brain.
she was lost. She was gone. Nala wasn't there. She was taken over.
So yeah, it would, but it did get to a point. And again, to do with the breakdown of our relationship as well, it was just this whole sort of additional layer of like, I don't know how many times I can keep witnessing this happen. I already am feeling anxiety around being able to do things with Nala. This is just feeding into that even more because I was getting to a point of confidence where I would have them both in the house together and have Nala muzzled, and I'd have, you know, without my ex being around. But then obviously, the more often any attacks would happen, I would lose confidence in being able to have them around each other. So it was a very difficult time, and it was
I don't think we could have carried on as we were if we had attempted to stay in a relationship.
With both the dogs also there.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been fair on either of them to continue living in that environment. And I know lots of people that do live in environments where they have to take, you know, and I get it completely because obviously we did it for like 2 years. But it is, and I think there are ways where you can live like that where if you're doing it in a certain way and if you have a certain home environment where it's okay. But I think actually so many people are just living in a state of dysregulation and
Continuously, yeah, because of that.
continuously, and it's exhausting because I'd work And then I'd get back, and then I'd have to get one dog out, do that dog, put that dog away, get another dog out. So I wasn't taking care of myself at all, because like it would be 9, 10 o'clock by the time I even thought about showering and eating and taking care of myself. And then I'd go to bed and then have to do it all again in the morning. And you know, obviously our relationship was different because he was doing chef hours. So obviously maybe if you're in a relationship or a partnership or a household where maybe people had more sociable hours and you could balance the care more, it would be easier. But there was so much of it that just sort of fell on me to do. And it was just absolutely exhausting. And it got to that point where, on top of already having some difficulties in our relationship, and then having that, it just was like, this is can't carry on.
Yeah, no, but I think it's also important for people to hear that there is a point where you can also say, okay, this is it. You know, this is where it ends, or this is where we split. Or let's say the relationship is great, there's no problem there, but still there's the constant anxiety over the two dogs, where there is zero shame in rehoming one of the dogs or coming up
Completely.
with another solution, which is to the benefit of everyone involved.
Yeah.
Which also doesn't mean that there isn't going to be pain, that there isn't going to be sadness over the decision or any of that. But like you said, this continuously living in a state of dysregulation that takes
Was awful,
a
absolutely awful.
toll.
And like, you know, I would end up, I didn't really realize how bad it had gotten until I was no longer in that environment. And you know, I'd got to a point where even hearing the birds singing in the morning would trigger me. And, you know, and I would get anxious and I would get annoyed and angry and frustrated at hearing the birds singing in the morning. And it was just everything was triggering, and it was just really, it was not a nice way of existing. And it's, you know, I'm not gonna lie, it's been a really difficult time, and you know, intense time changing our life so drastically, and you know, leaving a long-term relationship and moving to the other side of the country and starting my whole life over again. It's been a lot, but I wouldn't change anything for the world. And I think it's, you know, it's been the best decision I ever made, to be honest with you.
I think this is a perfect place
Yeah.
to start asking you the three, or to comment on the three words that I always ask everyone to comment on. The other perfect place would have been when you said that you just went into this podcast recording with zero expectations, because the first word is always expectation, the other one is frustration and celebration. But yeah, what's your take? What comes up for you when you hear these three words? Expectation, frustration, and celebration.
So I, for me, expectation where I'm at now is actually, I think it creates limitation by having expectations. I think, again, I've mentioned it before, like I don't believe in having low expectations, because I think that's approaching things from a negative sort of lack mentality of having low expectations. But I think having no expectations and being able to just, you know, move through life and do what you can do in each moment, and obviously with the aim for it to be joyful and happy and peaceful and nice, but also actually not allowing it to mean anything about you if it doesn't go that way. So I think actually we can limit ourselves and limit our dogs and the potential that we have to have a peaceful and content and happy life with our dogs by having sort of pre-existing expectations of what that should be or how that should look. And then frustration, I think that's something that we all feel at some point or another, including our dogs. Again, I'd love to say I'm free from frustration and I never feel it, and I'm, you know, just floating through life and it's all wonderful and happy all the time. It's not. And there are times where I feel frustrated with myself. There are times where I feel frustrated with Rafiki. There are times where I feel frustrated with other people. But I think the big thing for me now is that I'm in a place where I don't let that take over anymore. Before, if I felt frustration, that would sort of overwhelm me, and then I would sink into those old sort of patterns and habits of thinking and being. Whereas now I can sort of use the frustration as a bit of a sign or a signal that maybe something
more sort of underlying to look at. So actually now sometimes frustration can be a helpful thing, which is quite nice. And then celebration. So celebration's really big for me, and I've got a whole area in my online membership called Celebration Station.
I love
which
that.
is yeah, so it's a place where you can go because especially I'll try and keep this short because I'm conscious of the time, but obviously when you are living your life with any kind of a dog, but especially with a dog with big feelings about the world, actually celebrating the wins, often people in your immediate reality and in your immediate life don't recognize them or understand them. So walking down the dog without your walking down the street without your dog reacting, or having the post be delivered and your dog doesn't bark at the door, or you know, all these different things that to other people are like, well, why are you so excited about that? That's just, don't you just walk down the road with your dog anyway? But having a place where you can celebrate that, where people understand that, is really important to me. So I've created Celebration Station for that. But yeah, so celebration for me is, I think, one of the most important parts of life is being able to celebrate all the different facets of your life, all the different times where you are.
Accomplishing the things that you want to accomplish and having those moments that you want to have. And yeah, I think it's a very important part of our lives, and of having a sort of a joyful life is coming out of the sort of the fog and recognizing those moments, no matter how small they are.
Amazing. And I was just thinking, if it doesn't alliterate, then it rhymes in your the catchy titles you come up with for your programs.
There's got to be some kind of wordplay in there somewhere
Where for some reason, I don't know where that's come from,
has
but
got to sound catchy. I'm with you. Where can people find you if they want to know more about you, if they want to work with you, if they want to get into that celebration station? Tell us all the things. I will also put it in the show notes. Like I always say, you don't have to stop driving and all of that. It'll be there. But just for those people who can memorize this just from hearing it, where do they go?
So I am on Instagram and Facebook and dabbling my toes in TikTok at Matilda the Canine Coach, which is just all lowercase, all one word. And then my website is www.matildathecaninecoach.com. And then you've got sort of all my information about everything I've got on there. I've got the Love Yourself membership, Canine Community Connection group coaching sessions, and then I offer one-to-one coaching, and I'm also releasing some online self-study courses soon as well.
Super good. And for the people who are just on audio, it's Matilda without an H. So I originally wrote it with an H, but that
Okay, yeah,
does
so
not
should I
get you
spell it? So
there.
it's Matilda, the canine coach.
Exactly. We've got that sorted, which only leaves me thanking you for being so open, for getting on this podcast with me, talking about all the things. I know a lot of people are going to hear this and recognize so many things, and hopefully they'll be like, oh, so this is normal, and so that they can breathe a little bit better. Matilda, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been such a pleasure. I'm so happy to have been to be sharing space with you. I feel like we could have talked all day, to be honest with you.
We could, yeah, we should do a follow-up podcast or anything of the sort.
There's still a lot to dive into.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You can find the show notes to this episode and everything coaching on my website, kaisavanoverbeek.com, or you can go find us on Instagram at the Russ Cattle Dog, or maybe even Facebook, Kaisa van Overbeek Coaching. If you like listening to this podcast, might I ask you for a good review on whichever platform you're listening to the podcast too, because it helps us move up in the rating, which helps us be found more easily so that more people can listen to this, more people can benefit from it, more people can feel, as I always say, less alone in where they stand with their dogs.